Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2016 second quarter earnings results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Scott Wolny, President and CEO of Atlas Financial Holdings. Please go ahead, Mr. Wolny.
Thank you very much, Denise, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. We are very pleased with our second quarter results, which were highlighted by bottom-line improvements, significant sequential rate increases resulting in higher average premium per vehicle, and considerable book value appreciation. This morning, we'll discuss Atlas's results and share our thoughts regarding commercial auto and some of the trends that we're seeing within our niche markets. Our target market continues to display favorable pricing trends, and we feel we have a high level of visibility with respect to expectations for the coming year. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2016 second quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectation of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2015. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slides three and four. With that, I'd like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. The second quarter of 2016 was a strong period for the company, with bottom-line results coming in at our expectations and continued improvements in earnings per share, ROE, and book value. We're still seeing favorable pricing trends in our markets, targeting a better than 60% loss ratio in all areas, with an overall expense ratio within the 24.5%-26.5% range that we've communicated in the past. In the second quarter, this led to underwriting income of $6.4 million, almost 30% increase over the same period last year. We delivered a return on average common equity of 14.6%, consistent with our objective of beating the P&C industry by 500-1,000 basis points, and continue to believe Atlas can further improve upon this result over time, provided market conditions remain favorable. Our focus on bottom-line execution has delivered improvements in our operating results, most recently resulting in a combined ratio of 84.8%. Year-over-year improvements helped drive higher net income along with meaningful growth in book value. From the inception of Atlas, we've consistently communicated our team's commitment to a disciplined approach to growth, always prioritizing long-term return on equity through better than average underwriting results to create shareholder value. As I've mentioned on virtually every investor call from inception to date, top-line growth will always be less important than maximizing underwriting profit. This quarter is a great example of our commitment. We're continuing to see an overall expansion of the light public auto market, with some expected shifting from the traditional taxicab business to our other lines of livery, which we'll detail later in the call. Market trends continue to remain favorable in both broader commercial auto and our niche segment, and we believe that competitors may follow our price leadership, resulting in a return to recent growth rates with an even greater potential future underwriting margin. As has been the case in prior quarters where rates were increased significantly, we will monitor key ratios to determine whether these rate levels are sustainable or need to be moderated. In general, at this point, we feel conditions are encouraging for a continuation of favorable pricing and profitable growth in the coming year. We are reiterating our forecast of writing between $260 and $290 million in premiums for the full year 2016 and feel very confident that our current capital position will allow us to achieve this growth on a self-funded basis. During the second quarter, we did see gross premium growth in the single digits compared to the higher percentage growth in past quarters. But as we've discussed in the past, our premiums written can fluctuate from period to period, and Atlas maintained strong in-force premium growth during the second quarter. We also have a very flexible quota share program, which is available to help manage our balance sheet appropriately on a quarterly basis and can manage debt through our previously announced facility with Fifth Third Bank as well. As always, I want to clarify that this premium figure is an estimated range, not a goal. We will always put a priority on margin and long-term return on equity over premium growth on an absolute basis. With this in mind, should market conditions support price levels that we believe will deliver better margins and return on equity in the long term by writing marginally less business, we will do so. Key elements of our financial results for the quarter, as highlighted on slide 4 and 5, include increased underwriting profit and growth in our book value of over 11% from December 31, 2015 to $11.27 per common share as at June 30, 2016, and an 18.9% increase as compared to book value as at June 30, 2015. We've consistently indicated that based on our hyper-focus and specialized business model, Atlas should be well-positioned to deliver stronger margins with the goal of always exceeding industry ROE by 500 to 1,000 basis points. As I mentioned earlier, on an annualized basis, the company reported ROAE of 14.6% during the period. Atlas's second quarter combined ratio of 84.8% was considerably better than the 2015 combined ratio for the overall P&C industry of 98%. As discussed in the past, our expectation has been that future loss ratios should trend towards our prior year's pricing targets over time. We expect that the incremental rate we're able to achieve at this time, based on our strong value proposition, coupled with the current competitive environment, will deliver incrementally more positive results in the future. While a loss ratio can move up or down in any given quarter based on actual loss activity, it should generally continue to migrate towards pricing targets barring unexpected, extraordinary losses. As a result of our strategic focus on profitable growth, Atlas has increased book value over each of the past 13 quarters. Moving to the market and Atlas's performance in comparison. While the overall commercial insurance data for Q2 from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers has not yet been released, we are expecting to see incremental hardening. In general, anecdotal evidence, including both feedback from our distribution channel as well as information shared by other commercial auto insurers, indicate an ongoing need for more rate in the broader commercial auto segment. The overall commercial auto insurance market currently represents approximately $31.3 billion of the total $591 billion annual property and casualty insurance industry premiums in the U.S. in the past year. Our market research indicates that the niche on which Atlas focuses represents approximately $2.25 billion of the broader commercial auto premium. To be clear, this figure includes only full-time professional taxi, limo, livery, and paratransit drivers. Some of these drivers are dispatched either part-time or full-time by transportation network companies and are commercially licensed and insured. While this has created some shift in the market, we expect the overall market size to continue to grow in terms of total vehicles in operation. Part-time drivers using personal cars who are being dispatched via ride-sharing apps are incremental to the addressable market we target and are not included in the $2.25 billion market size I mentioned. As regulations continue to evolve across the country, and if these drivers are required to purchase commercial insurance in the same way traditional operators do, the size of the market for our products will expand further. On slide 7, we show the impact of seasonality on our premium writing. As seen in the chart on the left, the second quarter of each year represents the smallest amount of gross premium written when compared to the full year. Also, when looking at comparisons of Q2 versus Q1 of the last 5 years, Historically, gross premiums written in Q2 represent around 75% of Q1. Last year, the second quarter represented a higher percentage of the first quarter due to the fact that we reported only a portion of Global Liberty's gross written premium for Q1 based on the date of acquisition. During the first half of this year, and in the second quarter in particular, we did see business transition from the taxi segment to the livery segment within our niche markets in terms of percentage of total premiums. On a year-to-date basis, for the ASI pool companies, our limo, livery, and paratransit books of business grew 79% and 42% respectively, while taxi shrunk by 26%. While we generated a larger percentage of our premiums from livery and paratransit than from our traditional taxi service, overall growth remained positive, and based on feedback from our distribution channel and insureds, we expect the reduction in available taxis to flatten out. As we've mentioned before, Global Liberty does not currently write any New York yellow cab business. We also continue to see a reduction in terms of average vehicles per policy across both taxi and limo livery. This trend is consistent with what we previously communicated as an expectation, and it ultimately is a positive for Atlas given our focus on efficiently managing small fleet and owner-operator accounts. Overall, growth of policies in force were consistent quarter over quarter, with vehicles in force declining predominantly in the taxi service as some accounts took cars out of service. This was more than offset by growth in our livery and paratransit renewals. Our team will continue to closely monitor the overall growth in our market, and Atlas should continue to benefit from a greater number of commercially licensed drivers on an overall basis. While the second quarter has historically been Atlas' lowest in terms of premium, we were successful in benefiting from organic growth opportunities in many of our markets, despite what we believe is a somewhat temporary headwind in terms of a marginal reduction in taxis. It seems clear that the owner-operator livery space will experience greater than historically average growth, and we continue to maintain the belief that while impacted in the near term, the taxi industry will stabilize as well. The key to ensuring that the industry changes I've described can be converted into opportunities is to maintain our niche focus on delivering Atlas's strong value proposition to our distribution channel and policyholders. As a result, we expect to continue achieving underwriting profit at levels considerably better than the overall P&C industry throughout multiple market cycles. As discussed in detail at our recent Investor Day, we are simultaneously evaluating incremental uses of technology and analytics to ensure that our products and services evolve ahead of market needs as well. We've consistently indicated that based on our hyper-focus and specialized business model, Atlas should be well-positioned to deliver stronger margins with the goal of always exceeding the industry ROE. The second quarter was clear evidence of our ability to deliver on this goal. On slide 8, we illustrate our consistent growth of in-force premium. Year over year, this important metric grew 18%. The green portions of the bar in 2015 show the premium resulting from the Global Liberty acquisition in the first quarter of that year. With that operation fully integrated in 2015, any resulting growth in 2016 and beyond will be considered organic. The second quarter was the first year-over-year comparison on a full quarterly basis since the acquisition of Global Liberty. On slide 9, our premium by state is summarized for the quarter. We continue to successfully diversify on a geographic basis and saw strong growth in states with relatively lower market share, the largest of which is California. With a stated goal of achieving proportionate market share, or approximately 20%, during favorable market conditions, we still have ample room to leverage our current distribution for growth and desired underwriting results. I want to remind everyone that our excess taxi program in New York renews in the third quarter. This is a business arrangement providing excess coverage above the levels of risk retained by the insured, and only a small number of medallion owners qualify for this program. Those of you familiar with the company know about this seasonal item, and we wanted to make sure we explained it to any that may be new to the Atlas story. Turning to slide 10, our new business hit ratio demonstrates the efficacy of our distribution channel, as well as the strength of our brand and market conditions. In late Q3 of 2015, we began rolling out our new point-of-sale system called Atlas X. In the short run, this implementation impacted the data seen on slide 10 for Q4 of last year and again in Q1 and Q2 of this year. We had a chance to detail the positive impact of this interface at our Investor Day in May. Our pricing and product management teams have delivered consistent results informed by this metric throughout the past 3 years and continue to monitor hit ratios closely to ensure that our pricing activity has the desired effect. Demand for our products is at record levels, with application counts up approximately 40% year over year and 281 agents approaching Atlas in the first half of this year seeking appointments with our insurance companies, 145 of which were in the second quarter alone. As always, we remain very selective in terms of appointing new producers and are focused on writing only the best business at price levels we feel reflect our strong value proposition. On slide 11, we show new business submissions, renewal rates, and total vehicles in force. As noted earlier, while new business submissions are ahead year over year, we are seeing retention renewals below our target levels as a result of the near-term impact of price increases coupled with the fact that there are fewer vehicles per application, particularly in the taxi segment. The number of applications as well as premium per vehicle were in line with or even a bit ahead of our expectations. As I discussed earlier and mentioned on our previous conference call, lower average vehicle counts per policy are likely a function of fleet operators reducing their fleet sizes, probably as a result of the growth of ride-sharing services in certain local markets. Importantly, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, our average premium per vehicle in the second quarter was up 10% as compared to the same quarter last year. This was on the high end of the rate increase range that I indicated on last quarter's call, and we're monitoring the market closely to evaluate price elasticity. Moving to slide 12, as at June 30, 2016, our operating leverage as measured by net premium written to surplus remained roughly 1.4 to 1. Managing this ratio is important from a regulatory and rating agency perspective. We know that managing volume, operating margin, and financial leverage should result in the maximizing of return on common equity and long-term value creation for shareholders. We plan to utilize the reinsurance and debt facilities put in place in 2014 and 2015 to improve our GAAP operating ratio while maintaining healthy statutory ratios. Specifically, we have flexibility through the use of increasing or decreasing quota share on a quarterly basis as a measure of maintaining this balance. This ratio has been relatively flat as our retained statutory earnings grew by approximately the same percentage as net premium growth. I'll reiterate that we regard being a good steward of capital as a critical element of our business and are committed to ensure that this capability is always treated as a core competency. With the objective of self-funding organic growth in mind, we will ensure that our operating leverage is properly maintained. Overall, it was a very successful quarter. With that, I'll once again turn the call over to Paul for a more detailed review of our financial results, and then I'll return for concluding remarks.
Scott, our financial overview in the slide deck begins on page 14. I'll keep the quarterly financial overview relatively brief, and as always, we encourage each of you to review our filings and to reach out to Scott or myself with any questions. Gross premium written increased to $48.4 million in the second quarter, largely as a result of continued organic growth in our core commercial auto business. At June 30, 2016, in-force premium was $219.8 million, and the company's gross unearned premium reserve was $112.4 million. As Scott mentioned earlier, we do have the flexibility to make changes to our quota share cession rates. For Q3 2016, we are lowering the amount ceded under our quota share contract for American Country, American Service, and Gateway Insurance Companies from 15% to 5% of subject premiums. The cession rate for Global Liberty remains unchanged at 25% of subject written premium. This is a reflection of our continued capital strength and allows us to retain more of the profitable business we write in future periods. Based on our current trajectory, this change should result in a gradual increase to our GAAP operating leverage in future quarters. Net premium earned increased 9.1% in the second quarter of 2016 to $41.8 million as compared to $38.3 million reported in the second quarter of 2015. Atlas's loss ratio remained consistent at 58.8% for the second quarters of 2016 and 2015. We continue to see our underwriting expense ratio falling within our target range of 24.5% to 26.5% of net premium earned, and we reported a 26% underwriting expense ratio during the second quarter of 2016. Underwriting expense is comprised of a combination of acquisition costs, which are agent commissions and premium tax expenses, net of ceding commissions received under our quota share reinsurance contract, plus other underwriting expenses. Excluding the impact from share-based compensation expenses, The underwriting expense ratio was 25% during the period compared to 27.2% in the prior year period. Overall, Atlas's combined ratio for the second quarter was 2016 was 84.8% compared to 87% in the second quarter of 2015. Underwriting profit, which is the income produced prior to investment income, increased to $6.4 million from $5 million in the prior year period, or an increase of 28%. Atlas generates net investment income of $1.1 million and $1.2 million for the quarters ended June 30, 2016 and 2015, as well as $155,000 and $44,000 of realized investment gains, respectively. This resulted in an overall annualized investment yield of 2% for the quarter ended June 30, 2016. Atlas reported net income after tax of $4.9 million during the three-month period ended June 30, 2016, compared to $3.9 million during the prior year quarter. Atlas generated 38 cents per common share diluted for the three-month period ended June 30, 2016. This compares to 31 cents per common share diluted as reported for the three-month period ended June 30, 2015. For the second quarter 2016, the annualized after-tax return on average common equity was 14.6%. In comparison, for the full year 2015, the overall PNC industry reported a pre-tax return on average common equity of 8.49%, which, if tax adjusted using a normal federal tax rate, is 5.5%. On slide 15, we detail the components of book value. We increased book value to $11.27 during the first 6 months of 2016 from $10.15 at December 31, 2015. Toward the bottom of the slide, we step through the key elements that impacted book value year to date. Over the next two slides, we outline Atlas's balance sheet. Our cash and invested assets at June 30, 2016 increased to $240.3 million compared to $233.3 million at December 31, 2015. Unearned premium balance, which represents premiums corresponding to the time periods remaining on the underlying in-force policies, were $112.4 million compared to $108.2 million at December 31, 2015. As noted earlier, during the first quarter of 2015, we established a credit facility with Fifth Third Bank, which allows us to draw up to $30 million at LIBOR plus 450 basis points for use in connection with our statutory entities, plus another $5 million at LIBOR plus 275 basis points for other general corporate purposes. We have drawn $15.5 million from the $30 million facility and have infused these funds into the ASI pool companies, which include American Country, American Service, and Gateway in the form of surplus notes. We also drew $2.4 million on the $5 million facility to support the needs of the premium finance company we acquired in the Global Liberty transaction. As an investment philosophy, we continue to place a priority on preservation of capital to support future premium growth. Our investment portfolio duration of 3.2 years remain consistent with the expected liquidity needs and claim payout patterns, and the majority of our holdings are in fixed income securities rated AA or better by S&P. The high quality of our investment portfolio is detailed on slide 17. Because we intend to hold securities to maturity, while any increases in interest rates could create an unrealized loss in the short term, we would not expect such losses to be realized. Working with our outside investment advisor, we monitor the positions in our portfolio closely, especially in light of recent world events. Sorry about that. With that, let me turn the call back over to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. The second quarter was a period in which we produced solid improvements in our key operating metrics and feel there are future profitable growth drivers both within our existing niche and specific to Atlas. First, the growth of transportation network companies such as Uber and Lyft, as well as newer market-specific companies. While this development has resulted in some short-term shifting, we do see these emergent technologies ultimately expanding the commercial auto insurance market. The market growing and more insureds carrying people or things for money is ultimately a net positive for Atlas to the extent that these operators increasingly begin to carry commercial auto insurance, either for practical reasons or to satisfy regulatory or compliance requirements. Our underwriting standards and pricing have continued to remain consistent throughout the development of this industry and believe that the use of proper insurance products that safeguard both drivers and passengers is a natural evolution for the ride-sharing market. With this evolution, we see Atlas as well-positioned to benefit given our solid track record, experience with the data in the specialty light commercial auto space, and overall commitment to the industry. Second, despite our recent growth, we have still only captured a single-digit market share in most of the states in which we operate. This provides us with ample runway to grow as we pursue our target of a 20% market share within each market we serve. We are continuing to cultivate the relationships with our existing agency network. Commercial auto is a high-frequency line of insurance, and our agents and potential new agents can see the value proposition Atlas provides compared to generalists that may enter our space. The fleet operators that we work with depend on us to provide timely claim service in order to maximize their uptime for their vehicular assets. That service component allows us some buffer against potential price competition in our market down the road. We also look to our distribution partners as a source of valuable market intelligence. With a national network of specialized, focused agents, we're able to gain valuable insight into where our market is headed, allowing us to be proactive in our operations. As I've mentioned multiple times, we will always put a priority on margin and operating leverage over premium growth on an absolute basis. This distinguishes Atlas from many other insurance operations, and we believe it is critical discipline necessary to maximize long-term shareholder value over time. We expect to continue growing our book of business organically, targeting a better than 60% loss ratio with incremental rate increases in the mid to high single digits. As mentioned earlier, price elasticity will be monitored closely to appropriately balance future margin with operating leverage. Atlas is achieving our stated objective in terms of better than industry ROE and expect to deliver a result in the high teens provided market conditions remain favorable. I want to thank our committed and talented team for delivering a great result of which we can be very proud. With that, let's turn it over for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wolney. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. And your first question will come from Ryan Burns of Janney. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody. Obviously, it seems like the top line came in a little bit this quarter. Just wanted to see what gives you guys confidence you can still kind of hit those top line targets for the back half of the year, and maybe what steps you need to do to get there. Is it a change with rates? Obviously, it sounds like you guys pushed rates pretty hard in the quarter. Just want to get your thoughts there.
Sure. No, I appreciate the question, Ryan. I think that the first key element is to sort of break the premium trajectory down in two aspects. The first is the result of rate. Anytime we do push rate up, we do expect to see a slight pullback in terms of retention ratio and hit ratio. Candidly, if we didn't see that, we probably aren't testing elasticity sufficiently. We did expect that would happen, but believe that the market is going to continue hardening. And as it does, we think that the average market weight will rise following our price leadership. So we will monitor that closely in the third and fourth quarters to make sure it does happen. But again, that is our expectation based on market condition. The second piece of it is that transition of overall vehicles in force, where we are seeing a decline in insured taxis, but we're also seeing an increase significantly in insured limo and livery. Part of that involves a lag. So when drivers have been moving away from leasing taxis and going into the owner-operator mode within the context of transportation network companies, what we're finding is that they often start approaching it from a ride-sharing perspective where they may not commercially plate a vehicle, they may not buy commercial insurance, but if they determine that that is in fact the way they want to go forward, they will typically commercially plate their vehicle and buy commercial insurance so they can then be dispatched under the higher priced services from the transportation network companies. It's where they're going to make more money. We're also hearing from a lot of operators that some of those drivers are actually beginning to come back to the taxi segment as well. So we think we will continue to see expansion in terms of available limo and livery vehicles to ensure. We also think that we will see some more stability coming into the taxi space. Again, as with the price elasticity, we'll monitor that closely. But, you know, that is a transition that we've seen happening over the last couple of years. And, of course, we're soliciting lots of feedback from our distribution channel and the operators we insure to make sure that we really do understand what's going on. And so those are the two things that really give us confidence that, you know, we should still be back on track in terms of, you know, the full year goals. In fact, we don't feel like we're off track at this point, particularly given that Q2 is a relatively small quarter. And so if we were going to see a pullback in terms of growth rates, especially as a result of pricing action, the second quarter is a really good quarter to you know, see that happen. The final piece, and again, I just think it's always important to reiterate this anytime we talk about top line, is that the ranges that we provide are just that. They are not intended to be goals. They're not targets. Obviously, we are always going to focus on bottom line result over top line growth on an absolute basis. But, you know, we do want to make sure we're providing as much visibility as we can.
Okay, great. And then just shifting over to the reinsurance, it sounds like you guys are flexing down the quota share. Now, did that start at the beginning of the quarter, or does that happen later in the quarter? Just want to figure out how to model that. And then, you know, it just sounds like you guys want to kind of, you know, flex your operating leverage. Is that simply what I'm looking at?
Yeah, so it will take effect for the full third quarter. So the session will be 5%. Obviously, that will earn in proportionately. So all of the premium written in the third quarter will be subject to the 5% session. But, you know, as you convert that into earned premium, of course, that'll earn ratably over the next four quarters. So Q3 of this year, you know, through the end of Q2 next year in terms of the earning pattern. And, yeah, I mean, our view was that, you know, we've been growing surplus sufficiently to keep the net written premium to surplus ratios relatively flat, and by increasing, or rather decreasing, the cession of quota share and increasing the amount of profit we retain, you know, we can achieve marginally better operating leverage, and at the pricing levels we're at, we want to keep as much of that profit as we can.
Okay, no, great for that. And then just quickly, one last one. Obviously, with the shift maybe from taxis to a little more Uber and black car market, does that change? Is that a different distribution channel at all, or is it just the same one from an agent basis?
No, it's basically the same. And again, a lot of the drivers that we're seeing transition, you know, are going to the same agents that they had worked with in the past, or they were familiar with from the past. So as I mentioned, you know, we have been approached by a very large number of agents seeking appointments, and we have appointed some incremental agents where we think that they, you know, would really add value and be a true partner. And so we do consider their access to sort of the growing aspects of the market in terms of one of the criteria that could make them a beneficial incremental agent for our distribution channel. But for the most part, it's the same distribution channel.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the questions.
Our next question will come from Paul Newsome of Sandler O'Neill & Partners, LP. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for the
morning,
call.
Paul. Yeah, Paul.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your view of what you're getting on rate versus the underlying claims inflation.
So what we're seeing in terms of claims inflation is, in general, is about a 1.5 to 2% year-over-year inflation. It's a little bit higher on the physical damage side, a little bit lower on the liability side. The majority of our exposure is liability, not physical damage. So from a modeling perspective, if you assume kind of a net 1.5 to 2%, I think that'd be safe. And so when we see our average premium per vehicle up 10% year over year in the second quarter, you know, that should result in a pretty meaningful impact in underwriting margin down the road. You know, as we've mentioned before, obviously we expect about an 18-month lag between price activity and when we reflect it in our financial results. But we definitely feel like we are capturing incremental underwriting margin at the current rate levels. But, you know, frequency and severity are obviously things that we monitor very closely. We are continuing to see frequency moderate. I think some of that has to do with the fact that many of the vehicles we're insuring are, in fact, on the road slightly less, coupled with the fact that, you know, we are also increasingly seeing some better crash avoidance technologies, you know, some aftermarket, you know, some just becoming part of the fleets as our operators are using vehicles that have OEM technology that help in that regard. And, you know, again, on the severity side, we have not seen a significant increase in severity, particularly on the third-party liability side. And now that we've implemented the predictive models on the claim side in the first quarter, believe that we are going to be well-positioned to actually manage that even more tightly than we've been able to in the past. So obviously it's too early to be able to articulate what this specific benefit has been, but that is an area that we believe will provide opportunity for us as well.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for the question.
And as a reminder, to ask a question, you may press star, then one. Your next question will come from Brian Hollenden of Sidoti. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking
my
call. Since increasing rate in the second quarter, have you seen competitors try to push through accelerated pricing since the quarter ended? And if not, when do they follow? And if they don't follow, do you take your rate down?
Great questions. I mean, what at this point, it's hard to say specifically when we might see competitors follow. Generally speaking, when we've raised rate in the past, what we found is that our competitors, most of whom at this point are local, private, owned companies, many of them non-standard, often relying pretty heavily on quota share. So, you know, they do generally benefit more by increasing rate than increasing market share. And so, you know, that is part of why we feel confident that we will see them follow price leadership. So already, you know, we are starting to see our hit ratios stabilize in the face of the rate increases that we put through in the second quarter. If we continue to see that, obviously we'll feel comfortable that we, you know, hit the right target. If we don't see that happening, or if we see entities like state funds beginning to clear more of the renewals, you know, we would consider moderating rate increase that would be very regional and targeted in nature. But you know, if we ended up pulling back in certain areas, I think it would still be to sequential mid-single-digit rate increases year over year. You know, we wouldn't have to go back to flat just based on the data that we've been able to observe so far. But as I mentioned, it's something we're going to watch very carefully. And obviously, you know, we wouldn't have taken the rate that we did if we didn't believe the market was well positioned to absorb it. You know, both based on the competitive environment and also, you know, our belief in terms of the strength of our value proposition.
Appreciate the color. Just if I can ask one follow-up, the loss ratio was flat year over year when pricing has been sort of increasing mid-single digits over that same time period. Can you kind of talk to, you know, help us better understand why that was?
Sure. You know, I think a couple of things. First, you know, the loss ratio does move around quarter to quarter, so it isn't always going to be an apples to apples comparison. You know, we do want to try and be fairly conservative in terms of how quickly we recognize the benefit of price activity, particularly when our loss ratio is in the 50s. So that's part of it. And the second piece of it is, you know, having put the claims predictive model in place in the first quarter, you know, we do want to allow that to flow through. You know, where more and more of our inventory has been scored by the model to estimate severity so that we have a good baseline in order to evaluate the efficacy of that. So in the end, we expect that to further improve the loss ratio in terms of the average value of claims paid. So it should have a positive impact, but that is also part of why we're wanting to maintain a relatively stable perspective. But again, the key issue mostly is, you know, we were taking rate. We do expect it, the loss ratio to trend in a positive direction, but we want to be fairly conservative before we take it, you know, take advantage of that and reflect it in the financial result.
Thank you.
Thanks for the questions.
Our next question will come from Samir Kher of Capital Returns Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the questions.
Good morning, Samir.
I just want to ask, you made reference to the reduction of, I guess, utilization of cars of your insureds on the road, which led to kind of a bit improving frequency. Why do you think that is?
Well, so in particular in the traditional taxi space and even to some extent in limo and livery space, you know, when competition for rides or even drivers results in vehicles being taken out of service, there is a period before that where the revenue is down, but not down enough that you would essentially take the asset off the road. So, you know, what we found is that particularly taxi operators are seeing revenues down anywhere from 10 to 30%, depending on geography. And so within that range, there are definitely vehicles that are being insured full-time but aren't being used as often as they were in the past. And so, again, while we think that there ultimately will be a stabilization, particularly in the taxi space in terms of the vehicles coming out of service, overall the vehicles that are in service are more likely to be used slightly less than they were, say, 2 or 3 years ago, before there were as many alternatives to provide rides. And so that really is the general reason why we think that that's the case. And what we know specifically is that we have, in fact, seen frequency trending down. And so when we look at that, we obviously want to drill down into it and understand why that might be the case, particularly given that personal auto had actually seen some increases in frequency last year, you know, which ultimately I think were attributed to distracted driving and lower fuel costs by a lot of the personal auto insurers. So, you know, anytime we see something happening differently in our segment than in a broader segment in the auto insurance industry, we always want to sort of, you know, look at it with a skeptical eye, as it were. But ultimately, you know, we've covered this off on prior calls, but, you know, we got comfortable as to why what we're seeing in our data makes sense. And part of it is the fact that those vehicles are just being utilized less on average than they were in the past, but still kept in service.
Got it. Okay. And then as far as market conditions go, as the market has continued to firm in commercial auto liability, is the firming seen purely in price, or on the margin does it also help terms and conditions and claims metrics like frequency and severity as well?
I would say it's predominantly price in terms of what we're seeing. Yeah, I think most commercial auto underwriters utilize ISO forms, so I don't think you're seeing a lot of changes in terms of the scope of coverage. I do think it is predominantly underwriters, you know, in the broader sense, trying to figure out what the right price is for the product they sell. But again, where that's helpful for us is if there's overall price increases in broader commercial auto, that will generally create overall buoyancy for us. It will tend to result in ISO making recommendations that price be increased across the board on commercial auto. And so to the extent that our local competitors are following ISO, it will ultimately follow those recommended rate increases, which again is part of why we think the market will absorb the rate increases we put through in the second quarter.
All right, great. And on lowering the quota share, what's the amount of unearned premium that's coming back to you?
Well, it's a go-forward measurement, Samir. So it'll be 5% of subject written premium starting effective January or July 1st going forward. So all the premiums that were ceded under the contract through June 30th were at 15%.
Got it. Okay. That helps. And then just in general, philosophically on capital structure, how do you guys think about using your debt facility versus keeping your preferreds out there or ratcheting the quota share up or down?
So I think, you know, we think about the quota share as probably being the first mover in the sense that it is most flexible. You know, obviously we can electively increase or decrease it quarter over quarter at, you know, minimum of 5% session, which is where we're going to be in the third quarter, up to a maximum of 50%. But we look at it as less permanent. And so the debt facility, it would sort of be the next tier where, you know, it's a five-year facility. We've got about 3.5 years left on it. So while it's not permanent capital, it is more permanent, right? The reinsurance market today is very soft. We believe the terms we have on the quota share program are extremely competitive. But if we saw a series of large storms, for example, you know, you might see overall reinsurance firm up, in which case, you know, we don't want to rely entirely on quota share, which is why we put the debt facility in place. But both of those are non-permanent and relatively short-term tools. And then obviously, you know, equity capital would be the last thing that we would want to use in terms of, you know, raising money to support organic growth. And as we've said, we believe we can self-fund growth with the quota share and debt facility we currently have in place, coupled with the significant retained income, you know, that we've been plowing back into surplus. So, you know, I think the quota share obviously was the first tool, you know, or the first lever we pulled, but now it is at the minimum 5%. So if we did decide over time that we were able to, without creating a regulatory or rating agency concern, further reduce, you know, or capture more of our profit, you know, reducing the reliance on the quota share of the debt, you know, the debt would be the next lever we'd probably pull. But, you know, at this point, we don't see any anticipated changes in terms of drawing on that facility.
Okay, and how about the preferreds? I mean, did you guys intend to keep them out there?
Yeah, so the preferred shares were always issued in connection with acquisitions. So right now we have a tranche of preferred shares related to the Gateway acquisition. We have a second tranche of shares related to the Global Liberty acquisition. The terms of both of those are that we can redeem the preferred shares for face value plus any accrued interest after the third anniversary of issuance, and then they would convert into common after the fifth anniversary. So we have a two-year window. We are in that window for Gateway. We're 2 years away from that window, or you know, 1.5 years away from that window for Global Liberty. So for Gateway, you know, our expectation is that we would redeem those preferred shares prior to a point where they could convert, because they would be very, you know, meaningfully in the money. And that was always our intent, and the sellers of Gateway understand that. And same thing with Global Liberty. You know, when those ultimately are available for redemption, it would be our goal to redeem them. And just as a point of reference, you know, when we bought American Country, American Service, we actually issued a very large tranche of $18 million of preferred shares, and did redeem those when we got into the window. And in fact, we're able to redeem them by making an offer to redeem early at about 90% of face value. So it's definitely a tool that we've consistently used in connection with acquisitions, and, you know, have always intended to redeem those rather than let them convert into common.
Okay. And then just given all the storm activity in the second quarter, and then you guys have some Texas exposures, it looks like, as well. Was there any, increased loss activity that you guys had in your results?
No, not really. I mean, we, you know, our exposure is predominantly related to the vehicles. And so while we do have some physical damage exposure to the vehicles themselves, you know, we aren't insuring garages or other infrastructure from a physical damage perspective. So, you know, we really don't see a significant upticks in claim activity when there's been storms. You know, we've seen significant storms like Sandy in New York, for example. You know, we didn't see a significant uptick. And similarly, we have not seen a significant uptick in terms of claims presented. In fact, in some respects, you know, when there's heavy storm activity, you know, the kind of vehicles we're insuring tend not to be on the road, because people are staying inside. So from that perspective, in a way, it's, you know, probably a neutral impact, if not in some cases, even potentially a little bit positive. But in any case, we have not seen a specific uptick in Texas.
All right. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the questions.
And as a reminder, to ask a question, you may press star, then one. And we'll pause just a moment for any additional questions. And Mr. Wolny, at this time, I am showing no further questions. I would like to hand the floor back to you for your closing comments.
Thanks again, Denise, and thanks to everyone for joining us. We look forward to speaking with you again in the future.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.